fucking ass. Launching myself off the bed, I grab my hoodie off the back of the door, jamming my arms angrily into the sleeves as I fly out of my room and down the hall toward the cleaning closet by the bathrooms. I'm muttering under my breath like a crazy person when I reach the closet door, not caring if anyone hears the very colorful and highly offensive curse words that tumble out of my mouth. The inside of the closet reeks of bleach and must. I breathe through my mouth as I flip over a steel mop bucket, standing on its dented base so I can reach the lip of the crawl space that leads to the attic. Curse my short ass. Without Karina here to give me a boost, it takes 3 failed attempts before I manage to jump high enough to pull myself up using my upper body strength. I graze my knuckles and scrape my back in my haste to drag myself through the crawl space, telling myself that my hurry is all about my simmering rage and not my claustrophobia. Finally, I reach the other side, huffing and puffing and spitting wads of dust out of my mouth, still cursing like a sailor. I slide from the crawl space without a lick of grace, landing with a hollow thud on the ancient splintered floorboards of the attic. Wow. It's like watching a fully grown, fully clothed person emerge from a birthing canal. The voice, emanating coolly from the other side of the attic, doesn't sound all that impressed by the miracle of birth. Rather, he sounds quite put out by it. I sit up, slapping the sleeves of my hoodie, whipping up a cloud of dust that makes me cough. Fuck you, Jacoby. It's all I can manage around the hacking and spluttering. A glass of water appears directly in front of my face. A glass. A real one. Cut crystal with a pretty flower design etched into its surface. Where the fuck did he get this kind of a glass up here? Stunned, I look up, prepared to tell him that I'm not drinking out of a receptacle that's been packed away in a travel chest for the past 3 decades. But then, I see the thick pile of very new, very luxurious-looking blankets on the floor, and the basket, and the wine, and the hundreds of candles that have been placed on top of every available surface, their flames flickering and waving as they work industriously to drive back the dark. And the words turn to ash on my tongue. What the fuck is... I finally look up at Ren. My tongue suddenly seems too big for my mouth. Holy hell, he looks incredible. His hair's perfectly messy, tumbling into his face. Black shirt with actual buttons down the front, the top button of which is unfastened. His sleeves have been cuffed to his elbows, exposing muscled forearms. His jeans are faded and frayed at the heel, and the denim smells distinctly of laundry detergent. I know, because he's standing so close to me, that his knee is right in front of my face. Not that I'm smelling his freaking knee. That would be weird. Ren smirks down at me, and an unbearable ache swells in my chest, all the way up to the base of my throat. I can't fucking breathe around it. What the fuck is this? He asks, finishing my sentence for me. This is what a Friday night attic date looks like. No need to look so horrified. I didn't bring any weapons with me. I wish I had, I growl. You're delusional. You know that, right? This is not a date. Ren spins around, holding the glass to his lips and draining the water inside. I force my eyes to the ground, mortified by the fact that I don't want to look away. He walks back to the cozy setup he's arranged, sinking heavily to the floor. He faces me, lounging back onto the blankets, toying with the glass in one hand. What would you call it then? He asks. Maybe a war council? You want to go to war with me, little Lee? I just want you to leave me alone. Is that so much to ask? Ren huffs down his nose, his gaze wandering around our cluttered, curious surroundings. You don't really want that, though, do you? He states it, a raw, undeniable fact. You daydream about my mouth on yours all the time. I can see it playing out in your head. It's quite the show. You imagine what it would be like, trapped in a dark room with me, my hot breath in your ear, my sweat on your tongue, my dick rubbing up against your cunt, and you can barely sit still. And when you really lose yourself, you let your mind off its leash and you fantasize about what it would be like to have me actually inside you. You sit so very still, beautiful Elodie. So, so still. You don't move a muscle, not even a twitch. You stare straight ahead. You don't even dare to breathe. But I see your white knuckles and your pulse hammering away in the hollow of your throat. The way your eyelids shudder. The red shame that colors your cheeks when you're done with me in your head. He picks up the bottle of wine next to him and rips out the cork, holding the mouth of it to his lips. It's the most distracting, arousing, incensing thing I've ever seen. And I've seen some shit, let me tell you. He drinks just as deeply as when he just polished off the water a second ago. This time, I force myself to make eye contact as he swallows once, twice, three times. When he sets the bottle down, I get to my feet and slowly walk toward him. You know what? I whisper. What? He whispers back. I wish I could pick up that bottle and smash it over your fucking head, Jacoby. What's stopping you? He fires back the taunt so quickly, he must have known I was picturing that too. Because I'm not insane. I don't just go around assaulting people because I feel like it. I'm not a slave to my compulsions. Shame. Ren lets his head fall back. He looks up at me with a lazy self-assuredness that makes me so angry I want to cry. If you were, we'd have dispensed with this bullshit and fucked already. I curl my lip up at him. Is that all you care about? Fucking me? If I gave in and let you have me, would you finally grow bored and move on to your next victim? No. He says it without surprise or condemnation. I won't ever be done with you. Just as you'll never offer yourself up to me just to get me to leave you alone, sweet girl. Don't call me that. I'm not sweet. He laughs. That's the part I like the best. When was your last tetanus shot? What? He points the bottle of wine at me, at my feet specifically. You forgot your shoes, Stillwater. I did my best, but it's far from clean up here. You're also bleeding from your hand. I look down, shocked to see my own bare feet against the floorboards. How the hell did I neglect to put shoes and socks on? Kicking and scrabbling my way through the crawl space alone could have cut me to ribbons. Damn it, what the hell was I thinking? That you wanted to kill the conceited asshole lying on the blankets in front of you, that's what. Ugh. I was in such a rush to get up here and tear him a new one that I wasn't thinking at all. My knuckles buzz with pain as I clench my hand into a fist, inspecting the damage I did there. It's not as bad as it could be. The gash isn't that deep, but it definitely is bleeding. I pull my hoodie sleeve down over the injury, covering it up with the cuff. It'll be fine, I clip out. It'll stop in a minute. Ren's sharp gaze flays me down to the bone. Sit down, Elodie. I will not. I only came up here to ask you who the fuck you think you are. And once I tell you who I think I am, you're gonna wriggle back into that crawl space and disappear back downstairs? Yes, exactly. Exactly. Okay. Well, I think I'm the only guy in this godforsaken hellhole who you've looked twice at. I think I'm the guy you can't stop thinking about. I also think I'm the only guy who's ever made your heart race out of your chest. Am I wrong? I narrow my eyes to slits. Yes! Using the wine bottle again, Ren points at me rudely. You are completely incapable of telling the truth, aren't you? That's pretty sad. I am telling you the truth. Okay, then deny all I've said. Tell me I'm wrong. You don't imagine me. You're not plagued by me day and night, the way I'm plagued by you. See, I have no problem with the truth. I made friends with it a long time ago. A lie only makes a fool of the liar. The truth always comes out. I am besieged by you, and it fucking sucks. You're in my head when I wake up. You're in my head when I wander around this wretched place. And you're still there, tormenting the ever-loving shit out of me when I close my eyes at night. So, do it. Lie to me some more, little Lee. Please, feel free. But you'll excuse me if I choose to get wasted while I settle in for the show. I wasn't expecting this confession out of him. I've always thought him too proud and too arrogant to ever admit that he has a weakness out loud. It's impossible to comprehend that I am that weakness. Ren takes another drink, then spreads his arms wide, as if encouraging me to get on with it. He's so fucking sure of himself. He's so certain that he knows me, knows precisely what I'm going to say. I don't plan on living up to his expectations. Fine, you're right. I'm rotten and eaten up on the inside because of you. Is that what you want to hear? I let something spoiled and bad into my head, and now I can't rid myself of it, and it's festering away, driving me madder and madder by the day. Congratulations. I'm going against every ounce of common sense I own every damn day, and I'm making decisions I know are fucking stupid, and I can't do anything about it. How fucked up is that? If I were back in Tel Aviv, this wouldn't be a problem. None of it. Colonel Stillwater's foreboding presence would have nipped this bullshit in the bud the day I arrived here. I wouldn't have been weak enough to let my head run away with these thoughts. And Ren, well, let's face it, Ren would probably be dead by now. My father would have cottoned on to what he was doing, and the guy would have mysteriously wound up in pieces, scattered along the embankment of a fucking highway in black garbage bags. He drums his fingers against the side of the wine bottle, shifting so that he's lying on the welter of blankets now, instead of sitting. His shirt's risen up, exposing a few inches of bare stomach, and my chest pinches tightly. I'm the worst kind of addict. I know precisely how bad he is for me, and yet I can't stop myself from craving more. I had my first taste of him in the gazebo during the storm. The memory of his naked torso has been driving me to distraction ever since, and now I want that shirt he's wearing gone. I want it fucking gone, and I hate myself for it. Where's all of the self-control my father taught me? And the common sense? Like a sated cat basking in a patch of sunlight, Ren closes his eyes, resting one hand on his solar plexus. Was that so painful? He murmurs. Sit down, E. You have questions for me. I don't. For fuck's sake. Why is it so hard to be straight with him? I have a million questions, and I'm dying to know the answers to all of them. But sitting on that blanket is inviting a kind of trouble into my life that I don't need. Whatever questions I have are irrelevant. The answers aren't going to change anything, I tell him. I'm beginning to feel a little hopeless now. This situation's miserable. I'd give anything to get myself out of it. But the bitter irony of it all is that I'd also do anything to have him. He's the bad guy, the monster that crawls out of the shadows to hurt and maim those around him. Nothing good can come of him. But fighting this attraction I feel for him seems so futile and pointless that my will no longer feels like my own. I'm his prisoner, and Ren Jacoby is not a benevolent jailer. He'll keep me under his lock and key until he's bored of me, and I get the impression that his obsessions are for life. What harm can it do? He murmurs. You speak, I speak back. It's a conversation, Elodie. It won't fucking kill you. My heart is a sharp-edged lump of rock. It refuses to beat as I step onto the blanket, the thick woven material soft on the soles of my feet, and I lower myself down into a seated position. Ren smiles to himself, and my temper spikes. I don't know why you're grinning. You haven't won anything. Don't go marking your scorecard yet, Jacoby. Instead of squashing his smile, my annoyance only encourages it to grow in size. I'm not keeping track of points, and the only thing I'm interested in winning. God, don't even say it, I interject. Do not. It'll only make me hate you more. He opens his eyes, watching me askance, his lips slightly parted. Both his eyebrows shoot up, and I know he's going to finish his ridiculous sentence. Is your trust. When I was 6, I stayed up every night waiting for Peter Pan to fly through my window. I waited every night for him to come take me away. I wanted fairy wings and a beautiful dress, and I wanted to escape with him to Neverland. Guess what? It didn't happen. I grew up and I realized it was dumb to wish for things that were impossible. You should probably do the same. My tone is so thick with sarcasm that it feels oily and uncomfortable coming out of my mouth. I've never spoken to anyone like this before. Honestly, I don't like how it makes me feel. Ren rolls onto his side, his brows crimping together. He props his head up with his hand. Have you stopped to question why you harbor this kind of negativity toward me, Stillwater? I mean, really asked yourself why? I know why. You're an arrogant fuckboy with no conscience who terrorizes the people of this academy without a second thought. And you have proof of this? He asks evenly. You've seen it with your own two eyes? Are you serious? You're being serious right now? He nods. Well, let's see. You dumped a load of rotten meat in my desk. It smelled like rotten meat anyway. And you threatened Tom when he didn't want to manipulate me into giving him my phone. And you broke into my room. You know I didn't do that. I know you did, I argue. He shrugs a shoulder, laughing bitterly under his breath. What else do you know? I know that you're, ah, fuck. You know that Karina doesn't like me. She's been your primary source of information about me, right? And she's so wounded over Dashiell slighting her that she'd hate me in packs along with Lord Lovett no matter what. What else? Just because I haven't experienced you being a dick firsthand doesn't mean that it's not true. So I put a couple of frog's legs in your desk. I'll admit that wasn't very nice. I apologize for it. And I'm sorry I threatened Tom. I'm not very good with people sometimes. No shit. That has to be the understatement of the century. He pins me beneath a very serious, very green stare. Are you done? I bite the tip of my tongue, glaring back at him. I'm sorry that I'm imperfect. I'm fully aware of my flaws. But I'll work on a few of them if it'll make you happy.
Ha! Like my happiness means anything to you.
Sitting up slowly, Ren turns so that we're facing one another, his expression frighteningly intense. I care very deeply about your happiness, more than I should. I care about being
personally responsible for your happiness. And that, he shakes his head, is a confounding realization, believe me. He looks so astonished by this turn of events that I actually believe him. Must be weird, caring about someone else when you've only ever cared about yourself before. Ren flashes his teeth, a quick grimace that looks pained. There you go, making assumptions again. How about this? You suspend judgment against me for 3 nights. You come up here and you meet with me and we talk. You actually listen. And then you can decide if I'm the Antichrist. At which point, I swear on my family honor that I'll leave you alone if that's what you want. 3 nights. If it'll take you 3 whole nights to convince me that you're not a horrible person, then I'm not sure I should. Just quit being so spiky and agree already, he groans. Tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday night. That's it. 3 nights. I'll be on my very best behavior. And I'll see that you're not some evil monster and I'll fall in love with you? Maybe, he agrees. Or maybe you'll see that I am a monster. And maybe you'll fall in love with me anyway. In the dark, I kick and scream. I learned a long time ago that kicking and screaming doesn't help, but I have no choice. I am a deranged, trapped animal howling for freedom, a freedom that will never come. Please, please, I promise, I won't tell anyone. I won't breathe a word, I swear. I promise, I promise, I promise, I won't tell a soul what you've done. Please let me out.
18. Ren. She agrees to my proposal, like the prospect of spending the next 3 nights with me will be so traumatic that she'll need a decade of therapy afterwards. And perhaps she will. If that turns out to be the case, then I know a great guy in Albany whose rates are reasonable, and I'll happily pass on his information. But until that comes to pass, I'm going to make the most of the hours I get to spend with her. She sits Indian style on the blanket, using the material to cover her bare feet. They must be freezing. Staring at me like she's facing down the most daunting experience of her existence. Ask me your questions then, I tell her, flopping down onto my back again, affecting an air of carelessness that I don't feel. I'm far from careless, actually. This is a risky move on my part. I will be brutally honest with her, so that I can say I gave her the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, but it is dangerous. She could decide that I revolt her, and she really doesn't want anything to do with me. If that happens, I'll have to honor the deal I've made with her, and I'll have to leave her in peace. Only I know how badly that'll affect me. It'll destroy me from the inside out, and I won't be able to do shit about it. A promise is a promise, and I don't make them lightly.
Where are you from?
She asks, her voice as dull and flat as can be. She's trying her best to show me how tiresome she's finding this entire thing, and she's doing a really fucking good job of it. I was born in England, Surrey, to be exact. My mother was English, my father's American, though. New York. The Jacobis have lived in New York since the city was established. We were money guys in the beginning, bankers and investors. My grandfather joined the military, though, and then my father after him. Career army guys, both of them. I'm a blistering disappointment to both of them.
Because you aren't going to join up?
Oh, no. I could enlist and I'd still be the biggest letdown either of them has ever suffered. See, I'm not traditional Jacobi stock. I'm disobedient. I laugh as I say the word, hearing the identical ire in both my father and my grandfather's voices at the same time. I've always poked at the fences designed to control me and keep me in line, tested their boundaries. It seemed imprudent not to. If your father's anything like mine, then I'm sure that didn't go down well.
Ruefully, I shake my head. Not particularly, no. Are you telling me you railed against the almighty Colonel Stillwater?
No, she answers stiffly. I decided at a young age that I didn't like pain.
A knot forms in my stomach, tightening until it reaches the point where it'll take days to unravel.
He hurt you?
Oh, come on, don't sound so surprised, she says bitterly. Don't tell me yours didn't hurt you. That's all they know how to do, men like our fathers. We just made different choices, didn't we? I didn't fight back, you did.
I can't tell if she sounds so angry right now because of the topic of conversation, or if it's because I'm forcing her to stay here and do this with me. The why isn't really important, though. I don't like the harshness of her voice. Makes me think that she's suffering.
No, I answer. I don't like pain either, Little E. But I couldn't let him use it to control me. You should never give anyone that kind of power over you, no matter how much it hurts.
She makes a strangled, unhappy sound.
You haven't met my father. You have no idea how badly he can make something hurt.
I don't like the sound of that. Not one little bit. The beast inside me snarls, a low, threatening growl rumbling out from between jagged, sharp teeth. It rages against the idea that a grown man would hurt his own daughter. It demands to know what happened in crystal clear detail so it can formulate an appropriate punishment for this heinous crime. On the outside, I marshal my face into a blank mask, struggling to maintain an air of calm.
You'll be 18 soon, I say. Then you'll be legally free of him.
It's not that simple, and you know it. My father's not the kind of man to let me go just because I become an adult. He'll still be controlling every aspect of my life when I'm 30, for fuck's sake.
She doesn't sound upset, just resigned, which is even worse than if she were sad. Arguing with her will get me nowhere at this stage in our fragile proceedings, so I abandon the topic altogether. Our shitty fathers aren't going anywhere, which is, in fact, the problem.
What else do you want to know? I ask.
Where have you gone to school?
Always here. Always at Wolf Hall.
She seems surprised by this. Her eyes have been sparking with annoyance since she tumbled out of that crawl space like a legless newborn deer, but her irritation falters as she looks at me now.
For real? You've never gone to another high school?
Most parents shunt their kids from pillar to post until they don't even know where they're from anymore.
God damn it, she's too fucking beautiful. It's like staring at the fucking sun. I look at her for anything more than a second, and my retinas threaten to explode.
Neither Pax nor Dashiell would say she's the prettiest girl enrolled at Wolf Hall, but to me, Elodie Stillwater's the most enchanting thing I've ever fucking seen. The defiant pout of her mouth. The always slightly messy, in need of a brush, unruliness of her hair. The bright, wide-eyed stare that catches you off guard. Her hands are so fucking small, it makes me want to weep. She's tiny. Her waist and her slim shoulders and her feet, for fuck's sake. It's like she was crafted in miniature. The details of her hand painted in with unwavering attention to detail. She looks as though she needs wrapping up in tissue paper to keep her safe. Like a precious treasure. But isn't that just the kicker? Because everything about Elodie is a deception. She's small, yes, but she can defend herself. She's made out of tempered steel, not wafer-thin glass, and she sure as hell doesn't need keeping safe. Underestimating her would be a regretful mistake, one a guy wouldn't walk away from uninjured. My father thought routine was more important for me than having him around. My mother died when I was 3, and my new stepmother was highly allergic to small children, so it all worked out quite well for everyone concerned. They packed me off to boarding school when I was 4. They've bought 3 new houses over the past 13 years. I've always stayed in a guest room whenever I've been so graciously invited to stay for the holidays.
They never gave you a bedroom?
Despite herself, little Elodie actually looks interested in what I'm saying. And then she goes and says something that counters any concern she might have been displaying. That's fucking cold. I guess that explains where you get it from. I grin tightly. I mean, she's not wrong, but still. I have no reason to be warm to anyone outside of Riot House. Why would I wander around this place beaming like a lobotomized monkey when half of these idiots don't have two brain cells to rub together? My case in point. Elodie reaches out, her hand darting forward. She takes the bottle of wine from me, her eyes growing round when I laugh. What? You expect me to sit through all of this sober now? No thanks. She pours a large amount of the Malbec into one of the glasses I brought up here, shoving the bottle into my chest when she returns it. Feisty. It's a cycle of misery, Ren, she tells me. You cling to your social outcast status like it's a shield that'll protect you from the realities of this life, but the truth is that it's isolating you more and more from everyone around you. It's not a smart defense mechanism. And moreover, I can see straight through it. That's how all of this started for you. You wanted to build up a wall around yourself so high that no one would ever be able to breach it. Now, your heart's so frozen and iced over that it's got fucking freezer burn. My heart is not top sirloin. Whatever. It's fucked, is all I'm saying. And you telling me you're capable of caring about anything is frankly so unbelievable that this seems like a massive waste of both my time and yours. I'd hate to waste your time, Little E. God, how could I want to kiss her so fucking badly while she's telling me that I'm a lost cause? It's nothing so predictable as the fact that most girls normally trip over themselves to be in my presence, and she decidedly does not. There's an element of that, yes, but this need, fuck me, it's so much more than that. She's weighed me and found me wanting. I've never given a shit about what other people think of me before, but this girl's low opinion of me matters more than I can bear. Her defiance and her strength and her self-assuredness are addicting. She knows exactly who she is and what she stands for, and I want to breathe her like she's life its very self. Don't look at me like that, she says, turning her head away. The candlelight glows against her hair, creating a golden halo around her head. How am I looking at you? This is sheer insolence on my part. I know precisely how I'm looking at her, and I'm not planning on dialing it down one iota. I want to devour her, claim her, bind her to me any way that I can, and if she can read that in the burning fire in my eyes, then so fucking be it. I'm not ashamed of how I'm feeling, and I sure as fuck won't be hiding it from her either. Just behave, she warns. You promised. All right, fine. Have it your way. Ask me another question. I wait with bated breath, tension building between my shoulder blades as I anticipate what she's going to say next. It's thrilling, this exchange. To know that the things she's asking me here and now represent moments in the past when she sat alone in her thoughts and wondered things about me. Elodie takes three deep mouthfuls from her glass of wine. Okay. Why did Dashiell treat Karina so badly? Was it some kind of bet between you guys? Dashiell likes to break his toys when they become too important to him. She wrinkles her nose in disgust. So what? He did something to humiliate her and cause her pain because he liked her too much? That's the excuse you're arming him with? I'm not arming him with shit, and it's not an excuse. I'm giving you the facts. Dash reacts badly to situations where he finds his power diminished in any way, and liking Karina made him weak. He saw that weakness as a perceived threat, and so he rooted it out with his bare hands and crushed it before it could hurt him. The attic falls silent, the dusty old space breathing around us as Elodie studies my face. Her eyes rove over my brow, down the line of my nose. Her clear blue eyes hover over my mouth for a split second before they snap up to meet my own gaze. She looks like she's stewing on something, words piling up in a traffic jam on the tip of her tongue. "I know what you want to know," I whisper.
"Oh? Then please go ahead. Enlighten me with an answer if you're suddenly so all-powerful and all-knowing."
My breath catches in my throat. The strangest, most alien sensation. Something I haven't experienced in a very long time.
"You want to know if that's how my mind works. You want to know if that's what I'll do to you, if you let me in. But you can't allow yourself to ask me that, because asking is admission that you're thinking about it, letting me in. And that terrifies you."
"Jesus, Ren, I'm..."
"No, I won't let her dispute it. It's so fucking obvious. I'm sick of biding my time, waiting for her to relinquish herself to me." In one quick, predatory lunge, I rise up onto my knees, lean across the blanket, and I cup her face in both of my hands. I don't kiss her. Not yet. It's almost impossible, but I hold myself back.
"My toys have never been important to me, Little E," I whisper. "I don't throw them away because I'm afraid of what they'll do to me, or because I'm bored of them. I discard them because they never live up to my expectations. But you..."
Her eyelids shudder.
"You're not a toy. I have no expectations of you. How can I, when you're constantly surprising me and throwing me off my fucking guard? If you let me..."
Panic flares in her eyes. She's staring at my mouth again, complete terror radiating off her in waves.
"Ren, if you let me," I repeat, "I'll surprise you too. Just you wait and see."
She closes her eyes, a single tear streaking down her cheek. Out of nowhere, it's as though she's coming apart in my hands.
"Please, please, please," she whispers.
Numbed all the way down to my bones, I let go of her, a bitter, acrid taste spreading across my tongue. I wasn't trying to scare her. I wasn't trying to break her. For fuck's sake, I lean away, ready to do something monumental that I haven't done in years. Apologize. When she shakes her head and hurls herself forward, throwing herself at my chest.
"Please," she repeats.
This time, it sounds like she's begging me to do something rather than to get the hell away from her. The desperation on her face makes my blood roar inside my head, clouding my vision and making my pulse soar.
"All right. Okay, I've got you."
She's in my arms then. I crush her to me so hard that even I can't breathe. My lips meet hers, and the kiss is nothing like it was supposed to be. Yeah, I've planned this, with the same meticulous attention to detail I put into all of my actions. I was supposed to tease her, my mouth hovering over hers, my tongue skating over her swollen lower lips, my hands in her hair, making her breath come quick until she was frantic and couldn't stand for there to be any space between us a second more. There's no patience to this kiss, though. No teasing to be had by me or by her. Only need and want and a form of panic that kindles in us both and spreads like wildfire. How easily this could all end in disaster. How quickly I could lose myself, and how effortlessly I could break her. I feel it in her, as she must feel it in me. We're both so afraid of the ending, before we've even truly arrived at the beginning. But there's nothing either of us can do to stop this thing now. It's gained too much fucking steam, and neither of us know where the brakes are. Elodie's heart is racing. I can feel her pulse slamming up against my chest, and she's so alive and vital and fucking real that I can't actually believe that this is happening. She kisses me back, her hands reaching up and winding into my hair, and my blood turns to nitroglycerin in my veins. One small spark is all it will take, and I'll go up like a motherfucking H-bomb. She pulls back, nothing more than a split second to suck in a desperate breath, and my world splinters apart. I was supposed to be puppeting this charade.
There was an order in which this was all supposed to go, and at no point was I supposed to lose my goddamn mind. When was the last time I felt something like this? When have I ever felt something like this? Elodie makes a soft, whimpering sound as she brings her lips back up to meet mine, her fingers grasping tightly onto a thick tangle of my hair. And everything stills and blurs. She tastes like sunlight and honey. She smells like the last time I can remember being fucking happy. In my arms, her small frame feels like the most important, valuable thing I've ever held. Ripping my mouth away, I duck down, kissing the column of her throat, burying myself in the crook of her neck. And she begins to shake so violently that I have to press my forehead against her cheek in order to stop myself from going further.
Ren, oh my God.
She pants my name breathless, still arching her back and pressing herself up against me in a way that makes it very hard to think straight.
What the fuck are we doing? What is this?
She moans.
I don't know. I thought I did, but...
I shake my head, placing my hands so carefully on her hips that I can barely feel the material of her jeans against my palms. I pull back, putting some space between us. We stare at each other, neither of us shifting an inch as we try to figure out what the fuck just happened. Something prodigious. Some sort of shift in both of us that makes no good goddamn sense. One moment. How can so much change in one blink of an eye? Elodie swallows.
I think I have to go.
Frantically, she gets to her feet, full of energy and electricity as she spins around in a circle, holding her hair out of the way as she scans the surrounding area for...
Where the hell are my shoes?
You didn't bring any, I remind her calmly. I don't feel calm, though. I feel... untethered. Like I'm adrift and nothing makes sense anymore.
Fuck!
Elodie spins around one more time, still looking for her shoes that aren't there, and then she spins on me, glowering like a she-demon.
You shouldn't have done that, she hisses.
I didn't do anything. You're the one who kissed me.
All right, whatever. No sense in assigning blame. This is still your fault.
I thought there was no sense in assigning blame.
How can you just sit there like that? She cries. How can you not, I don't know, react?
She's being patently ridiculous, but I know better than to tell her so to her face. I don't think I could summon the words anyhow. Elodie growls like a feral cat, hurling herself toward the crawl space that'll take her back to the girl's wing on the fourth floor. I watch her disappearing into the darkness, knowing I should tell her about the tiny doorway on the other side of the attic that leads out onto the boys' wing, but my throat's too jammed up to manage it. I sit there on the blanket, very still, staring down at the half-drunk glass of wine Elodie left behind, reeling. An hour passes, and then another, and the candles blink out, one by one. I'm cold and sore by the time I eventually get up and leave. The walk back to Riot House is a perplexing one, to say the least. I needed to fuck with her. It's been the only thought that's consumed me for weeks. I wanted to wreck her. But back in the attic, kneeling alone in the dark, I saw everything so much clearer than before. I came to a stark and horrifying realization that's turned my entire existence on its head. I will not be the one to wreck Elodie. She'll be the one to wreck me. This knowledge is cemented, well and truly in place, when I get back to my room and see the manila envelope there, waiting for me on the end of my bed. I come apart at the seams when I read the police report inside it, a fury like no other, pinning me between sharp steel teeth.
19. Elodie. Where the hell did you sleep last night? What? I open my eyes and all I see is sky. A gunmetal, angry, petulant sky, laden with clouds that promise rain. Karina appears a second later, her upside-down face materializing right above mine. Her hair is tugged back into a fluffy ponytail. Her entire face is a grimace. Instantly, I suspect that she found out what happened last night, and she's come to cart me off to the madhouse. What do you mean? I came by your room at 6:30 and you weren't there, she says. Your bed didn't look like it had even been slept in. This is one of the many things people without military parents will never understand. I got up early to run, and if I get up, I have to make my bed immediately, I explain. It's physically impossible for me not to make it. Karina makes a revolted sound, stepping over me and sitting down beside me. Sounds like you were living under a dictatorship before you moved back to the States, she says. If only she fucking knew. Running sounds horrible, too. Did you nearly kill yourself? Is that why you're starfished out here on the lawn all by yourself in the wet grass? I can't tell her that I ran myself until it really did feel like I would die, and then I collapsed here, unable to move because I was too lost in the memory of trying to climb Ren fucking Jacoby like a tree. So instead, I nod, groaning very loudly and very miserably. Damn, dude, physical exercise is bad. I highly recommend you avoid it in the future, Karina advises. I'm used to working out hard every day, actually. It's the only thing that makes me feel human. I grab a handful of the grass I'm lying on and tear it out at the root, sprinkling the loose blades through my fingers, letting them fall to the ground. Clearly, it didn't work this time, Karina observes. No need to go taking it out on the grass. What's up? No, I'm totally fine. I say it too quickly with far too much enthusiasm. Karina looks at me like I've got a screw loose. Okay. Well, I'm gonna pretend like you're not acting super fucking weird, and I'm gonna wait for you to ask me how last night went. Last night? With Andre! Damn, Elle, I told you I might not come home last night, and now here I am at 8 in the morning, wearing the same clothes as last night, with mascara smudged all over my face, and you can't put 2 and 2 together? Spit it out right now. Tell me what's up with you. Did you have another run-in with Ren? My cheeks burst into flame. I shake my head so vehemently that I can feel my brain rattling around inside my skull. No, who said anything about Ren? Why would you think that? I haven't seen him since he waltzed out of Fitz's class yesterday. 2:15? I think it was around 2:15 in the afternoon. Karina frowns deeply. Okay, that was oddly specific. How did everything go with Andre? I ask, diverting the conversation into safer waters. Did you enjoy the movie? Fuck the movie. I saw the opening credits and that was it. Ask me what happened. I've got no idea. As soon as the lights were out and people started acting, we were all over each other. It was so intense, like so intense. Have you ever kissed someone and everything just faded? Reality just slipped away? Have you ever felt like you were melting into someone so viscerally, both physically and mentally, that you don't even know who you are anymore or what planet you're fucking on? Ren's hands cupping my face. Ren's mouth fierce and demanding on mine. Ren's hot breath skating over my neck. His teeth nipping at my skin. His arms pinning me to his chest. The attic pitching and swimming, fracturing into a million disjointed pieces. I shake my head, blinking in a daze. No, never. Can't say that I have. Sounds fucking dumb, but it was magical, like real magic. Once the movie was over, I walked with him back to his place and, well, let's just say I didn't get any sleep. I'm exhausted, and my body feels like it's been stretched in every direction. I can't lay my legs flat on the floor without my hips creaking like a squeaky door. I'm telling you, that man knows exactly where a woman's G-spot is. I didn't have to provide a detailed roadmap or anything. I'm assuming Dash needed some direction, I say, closing my eyes. The sun's far from out, but the sky's really goddamn bright. I wouldn't be so blinded by it if I sat up, but I'm still wallowing in too much self-pity to muster up the kind of motivation I'll need to drag my carcass into an upright position. No, Karina says bitterly. He knew perfectly well, too. But we're not talking about him. We're never talking about him again. As far as we're concerned, that boy is dead, and no one went to his funeral. I try not to smile. Your wish is my command. Karina dives into a full explanation of what happened with Andre. She paints a vivid picture of his house, which he shares with three other guys from college, and how clean and tidy his bedroom was. She told me about his shelves, bristling with football trophies and academic awards. See, not all jocks are dumb. And then she tells me in intimate detail how Andre made her come three separate times before coming himself, which apparently makes him a gentleman of the highest order. And the whole time, I lie in the grass, my sweat gone dry and itchy on my skin. And I try not to think about my illicit rendezvous in the attic. Thoughts of Ren plague me. He's an affliction I can't escape, no matter how hard I try. The look in his burning green eyes when he pulled away and ended our kiss was, fuck, it felt honest. He didn't seem like he was putting on a show. He appeared to be as flustered and stunned as I was, which just doesn't seem possible. My gut tells me otherwise, though.
Elodie, are you listening? And why are you holding your fingers to your mouth like that?
Shit. My fingertips suddenly feel singed. I lower my hand, guilt gouging dagger-sharp claws into me. I wasn't listening. I was replaying the kiss, remembering Ren's mouth crushing down on mine. And the way everything that was important to me before that moment became so irrelevant and small.
You need to get out of this damn place, Karina informs me. We should go to the arcade tonight.
I can't. The words are out of my mouth before I can trap them behind my teeth.
I have something. Something I need to do.
I cursed myself out for my own stupidity for at least an hour before I fell into a fitful, restless sleep last night. I promised myself I wasn't going to go back to the attic tonight, but I fear I may have been lying to myself again. It's becoming a troubling habit. I want to go back. Against every instinct I possess, I want to go back and hold up my end of the bargain I made with Ren. I know that, if I don't, he's never going to let me live it down. Heat pools like a boiling pit of lava in my stomach. The prospect of another kiss.
Damn it all to hell, what the fuck is wrong with me?
Karina says,
that's very cryptic. And here I was, thinking I was your Wolf Hall bestie. Have you been making friends behind my back, Stillwater?
No, of course not.
All right.
She seems neither happy nor convinced. I know she's only playing around, though.
So long as you're not planning on replacing me with Damiana, then I guess I'll be okay with you keeping your mysterious secrets.
Nope, nothing mysterious, nothing secret. Just got a group video chat with some of the guys back in Tel Aviv, that's all.
Lie, lie, lie. It's all I'm good for. I'm the worst, most deceitful cretin to ever live.
I also have to get some work done, or I'm gonna have to cram all of my assignments into tomorrow, and I don't feel like frittering away my Sunday like that.
This weekend's workload is unusually punishing, Karina agrees. You feel like hitting the library for a couple of hours this afternoon then? We can combine research notes for English. Relieved that she's not going to press a hangout later on tonight, I relax into my shame, attempting to ignore it. Sure, okay, that sounds great. Given my obsession with books, it's surprising how little time I've spent in the Academy's library. I inspected the place briefly when Karina gave me the nickel tour of the school, but I've only been back once to get my library card since then. Cool afternoon light floods in through the vast banks of windows that form one side of the massive space. Karina leads the way through the loaded book stacks, her hips sashaying as she weaves a route through row after row of reading desks, complete with emerald lights and piles of scrap paper, toward the desks that have been arranged right next to the glass, giving a view out over a steep hill that leads down to a large, immaculately groomed playing field with goalposts at either end. Wouldn't have pegged Wolf Hall as a football kind of school, I mutter, dumping my bag down onto the desk and unzipping it, rooting around inside for my notebook. It isn't, Karina shrugs. The football field, the basketball courts, and the tennis courts are all for show. They're to encourage parents who care about sports to enroll their kids here. Wolf Hall only cares about academics, though. It's true. I haven't attended a single PE class since I got here. Now that I've realized this, it does seem weird. Surely they have to do some form of physical exercise here. Karina scowls. Yeah, well, just wait until spring properly sets in. We're cross-country runners here at the Academy. Ms. Braithwaite says it builds stamina, fortitude, and mental discipline. Cross-country running, Sounds like a riot, I grumble. What the hell are you talking about, masochist? You voluntarily went on a 6-mile run this morning. You'll be just fine. I will. I know I will. Colonel Stillwater ran me, screaming in my ear like I was one of his shit-kicking grunts, until I could easily clear 15 miles. But still, there's a difference between running because you want to clear your head and escape your demons, and running because you have no other option. And running as part of a pack of people all jostling and vying for the best possible time? Sounds like bullshit to me. That's at least a month away, anyway. We have plenty of time to train for it if you're interested. In the meantime, let's get this assignment out of the way and ace this motherfucker. My mom promised I could go to Spain for spring break this year if I maintained my grades. And there's this amazing tango festival in Granada I wouldn't mind checking out. Hey, you should come. Oh my God, traveling through Europe together for a couple of weeks would be so much fun. Karina's enthusiasm's contagious. I find myself nodding along with her, getting swept away in the excitement. But there's no way I'll actually be able to go with her. My father would never allow it. He'll either expect me to stay put at the academy or come back to Tel Aviv, and I am so torn between the two options. I miss my friends and desperately want to see them, but staying with him in that house for 2 whole weeks? I honestly don't know if I would make it through to the other side. We study, flipping through pages of textbooks and reference documents, sitting in companionable silence while we work, and the calm of the library sinks into my bones. The place is serene and full of light. I love being able to look out of the window and see the trees stretching on forever into the distance. At around midday, my phone buzzes in my pocket. It's on silent, but the vibration's still noisy enough to get Karina's attention. Her dark eyes flick up to meet mine, her brow arching into a question mark. You gonna check that? She whispers. I take the phone out, tight-lipped, dreading what I'll find. And sure enough,
There's Ren's name blazing across the screen, sending my pulse rocketing skyward. I'll read it later, I say, turning the phone over in my hand. Don't be stupid. We're miles away from the front desk. They can't see you over here. Read your message. We aren't prison inmates on lockdown. It'd be weird if I refused. I think it would be anyway. I can't remember how not to act suspicious now, and I'm questioning every little thing I want to say or do. I flip the device over in my hand, opening the screen with my passcode, and text messages open up automatically. Ren's message sits there at the top, in bold, ready and waiting for me to read it. My hand trembles as I tap his name, my eyes quickly skipping over the brief message that opens up for me. Ren, where are you? 3 words. I don't know what I was expecting, but 3 short, clipped words that somehow managed to convey the bastard's extreme arrogance? Well, that's underwhelming, to say the least. Where am I? Like he has a right to know my location at all times? I don't think so, buddy. Me. None of your damn business. You okay, girl? Karina asks, around to the end of the pencil that she's chewing. You look like you're about to hurl a chair through one of these windows. She's too perceptive for her own good. Or I'm just really terrible at hiding my emotions. I should probably work on that. I cut her a sorry smile, sighing heavily. Yeah, just my dad. He's difficult to please. We don't really see eye to eye on much. The things I've just told her are 100% true. Describing Colonel Stillwater as difficult to please has to be the understatement of the century. And we don't see eye to eye on anything whatsoever. I still lied to Karina by pretending it was my father who had just messaged me, though. Ren Jacoby's turning me into a liar, and I don't fucking like it. Ren. Are you at the academy or off campus? Me. I repeat, none of your damn business. Ren. You might as well tell me. I'll find you either way. I send him the thumb emoji, the most passive-aggressive of all the emojis. Me. Good luck with that. I stick my phone back into my pocket, resisting the urge to growl. Tapping the end of her pencil against the pages of the open book in front of her, Karina studies me sympathetically. I'm lucky I get on with my folks. Seems as though every other student in this place has fucking sociopaths for parents. What's your dad's damage? I'm sorry? Yeah, you know, why is he such a prick to you? Why does he treat you like dirt all the time? Because I remind him of my dead mother. Because I've seen what he's capable of, and I know his self-righteous, holier-than-thou attitude is all an act. Because I could turn his world upside down with one tiny phone call. Because he's my father. That's just what he does, I say softly. She seems to stew on this for a beat. After a moment, she shoves away from the desk and gets to her feet. You like chicken? Everyone likes chicken. Okay, I'm gonna run over to the cafeteria and get us some food. I'll sneak it back in and we can eat here. They won't even notice. I have no idea how vigilant the librarians are here. Karina knows better than I do. So I take her word for it. I offer to come with her, but she tells me to stay put and save our spot for us. I get back to work, hunting for references and information that will be useful in our essays. But as the minutes tick by, I grow more and more restless. I can't concentrate. Trying to focus on any one thing is almost The Assyrian came down like the wolf on the fold, and his cohorts were gleaming in the purple and gold. The hairs on the back of my neck stand up, adrenaline singing through my body, bringing my focus to a very sudden, sharp point. And the sheen of their